am going to, are you ready, Daniel? All right, I am going to introduce our first speaker, who is going to be Rena, and she's going to speak on tradition five, and you have 20 minutes. Would you like me to give you some type of, what would you like me to give you, Rena? A 1 minute warning? Oh, you waiting to unmute her.
And I've been unmuted. I'm
There
like,
we go. I know, right?
I can't speak. So if I can get a 10 minute and a 5 minute.
A 10 minute and a 5 minute. Okay. All righty. Okay. So thank you very much. And let me unmute, please, Danielle, when I have to. Thank you. Okay. All right, Rena, you're on. Thank you. Tradition five.
Right. Hi, I'm Rena. I'm powerless over food. Hi, everyone. It's good to be here. I'm going to pretend I'm not being recorded because, well, I don't mind being recorded, like in a big picture way. It makes me a little nervous because I listen to so many podcasts, and they all of other people, and they always sound so crisp. But I'm like, how do they keep it together? So I don't know. Maybe I'll suddenly be together now. I don't know. What I figured I would do is spend the first, I don't know, 8 to 10 minutes talk, giving a kind of a qualification, tell you, especially for the newcomer, just to know. And by the way, if anything in my story, if nothing sounds familiar, that's totally fine. If some feeling sounds familiar, something, all you have to do is attach to one thing. And if it's nothing with me, it'll be with somebody else. But usually the feelings is where it's at, not with the outside circumstances of our lives, at least for me. And then I figured I'd spend the last 10 minutes talking about tradition five as it relates to my life and as it relates to a program. So we'll see how that goes. And I'm committed that when 10 minutes hit, I'm just going to change the subject and talk about the tradition. Let's see how this goes. Wherever I'm at, whatever story I'm in the middle of. I'll start out with the fact that when I was younger, like much younger, I'm talking 3, 4, I was just strangely a very quiet kid who lived in a world of books, Bozo the Clown, and chocolate chip cookies. That was it. That's all I remember from those years, covered in crumbs. Just reading and watching Bozo the Clown in a basement with 70s fake wood paneling. Okay. So, and I stayed quiet, apparently. I have very little recollection of this time. And I don't believe it's necessarily because anything traumatic happened. It might have, but most likely I was just kind of checked out in general. Like, I think I was checked out in general. And then around 9, 10, early, I guess, although it seems like everybody in OA has early, but puberty hit early, surprise. And I suddenly had like a size double D chest when I was like 10 and hips. And my mother, who is at least medically anorexic, I don't know spiritually or anything else, I just know by the numbers and physical indicators, couldn't, it terrified her that the thing she most hated about herself was being pear-shaped, and she just wanted to pare down the pear. And suddenly I pop out like Betty Boop, unlike my sisters, and she wanted to push me in. Like, I picture her sitting in the mirror trying to push my hips in. And so lots of diets ensued. You guys all know how this goes. It's not like this is the first, no one's first rodeo hearing it. I went through a teen weight program and a teen Optifast, and one wasn't really, all sorts of crap. And so I hope it's okay to curse. I'll try to limit it, but for this one, it's particularly necessary because I don't know how else to describe it. But at like by the age of like 12, 13, I'll just do it once. Hopefully not again. Probably I will. But I became fuck you fat. Like, I'm gonna be whatever size I want, and I don't care. I'm gonna eat at you. I was already eating all the time. It's not like this made me a compulsive eater, but I just decided that like I was not gonna be like my mom. Thank you very much. I was gonna eat what I want, do what I want. I was gonna have way more fun than my sisters and my mom, and I did. I got into all sorts of trouble. It was fantastic. Did I have boundaries? No. Did I have self-esteem? No. Did I not know how to say no? Did I think I deserved to say no to anything? No. I had to show up for everything. Like, there was a lot of desperation involved. I don't want to pretend like, oh, I said F you fat and I was happy. Like, I was F you fat and all the things that come along with that, right? Moving on. Senior year of got into all sorts of trouble. Senior year of high school. I got into a college that no one expected me to get into, including myself, much better than expected. And it was early decision. And when I got in, I remember I had all D's and F's and then just did a test and a really good essay and something unexpected happened. That was like unbelievable, right? And my mom said, let's go celebrate at your favorite restaurant. She was willing to let me go to my favorite restaurant. And I was like, why do I always have to celebrate with food? And she was like, you don't want to celebrate with food? I'm like, no. And I don't know to this day why I said that, but that so began my first bout of anorexia. And that went for 2 years of just straight down. Like, it's not like I ever tried to diet before. It wasn't just, I don't know what happened, frankly, like it just in terms of the food, my weight dropped dramatically to the point. And then I got obsessed with it because all the comments started, you have such, who knew there was such a pretty girl under there? And, you know, and oh my God, you look almost anorexic. What's your secret? So I loved it. I hated it. I was angry about it. And I effing loved it, both, you know. Fast forward, of course, what goes down must come up. The minute I had that first bite of like food again, that so began years of binging and starving, you know, like trying to exercise it off the like class, like, so that went on. And then after a few years of that, I gave up and said, you know what, I'm just gonna stop fighting it. So then the binges stopped being binges. I just ate all the time again, the way I did when I was younger. And that cycle of what I just described, the whole thing, anorexia, binge, try to fight it, eventually just eat all the time. Whew, that happened a lot in my life. And you about 2 years, so I'm gonna move forward to law school graduation. I describe this moment with a mixture of arrogance, pride, deep sadness, and it encapsulates 5 years of my life very quickly. So I'm gonna describe my law school graduation. The pride is not, I'm not proud of the pride. How's that? I don't know how else to tell you. It's law school graduation. I'm wearing a size, I think 14, 16 dress that's so tight. I'm like, it's busting out of it, right? But I'm not going back to Lane Bryant. I'm going to fit in this effing dress, you know? And I've got the graduation robe over. So it doesn't really matter how tight this thing is. If it rips the seams, I'm good. Okay. So it's super hot. I'm sitting at the law school graduation. I have a bottle of Southern Comfort in my hand because I got to AA, look, the other program before I got to this program, I guess everyone calls it the beverage program. So I got that in my hand and I knew it was going to happen, that I was going to receive every single award at graduation. And I did. And I took a big shot to each one and looked back at my mom pretty much at each one because I wanted her to see that I could be, and I don't say fat, like there's like I was, I don't mean it in any kind of negative or positive, but in my mind it was, I'm fat and successful the way you said I would never be. I'm top of my class, I got every award, shot to me, I don't look like how you wanted me to look. Until the last award. And then the dean said, that's the part I have like a sick pride in still. I wish I didn't, but I do. And then the dean said, you know, there's one other award that the students, so there was a paper plate award like a week before with just the students. And the dean knew about it because it was in like the student rag or whatever, a newspaper. I got most likely to die in a Chris Farley-like fashion. And that's the truth of who I was. That's the truth. And that's the one that makes me feel sadder. The longer I'm in recovery, the more sad that makes me. And it still makes me sad. And I laughed it off that day and blacked out at graduation. Like, who cares? It's so funny, but it was not funny. I was so lonely. But fast forward, because we have to move on. Moving on past the sadness. I'm glad to be able to hold it and move on. I end up at a big corporate firm. My weight goes up and up because now I'm sitting in a chair for 18 hours, eating all the time. There's no holds barred. And then a 10-year relationship ends while that's happening, about a year into that. And he said, I don't go back to who you were before you met me, please don't. And I was like, we have any control over that. I remember being like either you or I have any control. Cause anytime we were apart, I went right back to it, even for like a day or two. So like, why was I not gonna go back? You know what I mean? Like I was going back. So person walks out the door and I go down to the little quickie mart downstairs. I'm in a city at the time. I buy a carton of cigarettes, a bottle of vodka, no food. And I was way over, I don't know what, but I was outside of regular clothes on the heavier side at that point. And I just use regular, not good, bad. It's just what's in the stores, right? So I ended up for the next 2 years shuttling down to a low weight I never expected to get so low that I was scaring myself or so drunk or in such a blackout. I blacked out over 300 and something days. And I'm telling you all right now, I would have rather gone home and slept with a stranger than gone home and risk binging on food. I'm just telling you, like, that's who I am. Right? I was I did it in a blackout. I did it not in a blackout, but I mean, most of every night for the last 300 or something of it was a complete blackout while still working. It was a horrific time and one of the loneliest periods. And I don't know. I mean, whatever I think about the universe, one day I looked in the mirror with a drug dealer on my couch. My utilities shut off, though I'm in this fancy condo with my firm across the street. I have to shower at my gym because my shower is too gross at this point, because I couldn't manage to pay the bills because I couldn't open the mail. And I'm shaking because I'm so hungry, or is it because I want the drugs? I don't know why my heart's racing and I feel like I'm going to die. But I look in the mirror, and only because I can finally see in the mirror, because light came in because it was morning, because utilities were a situation. And I suddenly saw for the first time who I really was. Like, I saw that I was 10 minutes.
Is that 10 right? Minutes, yes.
Thanks. So I saw that I was emaciated. I was covered in bruises. My nose was red. I had blacked out 300 nights. My hair was falling out. I hadn't had my period in months. That was terrified to be left alone with food for even a minute. And I crawled my way to treatment on my own because my family wasn't exactly on board. They weren't opposed, but they weren't on board. They couldn't understand when I still had my job at this big corporate firm. Like, they couldn't. And frankly, when I went into the firm, they were like, finally. I'm like, I'd like to take a medical leave. They were like, finally. I mean, it was sad then, but I'm grateful. Fast forward a year into that, what, surprise, surprise, somebody sends me to OA because all I did that first year was binge on food and want to blow my brains out, begging on my knees for the universe to take me because it hurt so much how much food I was eating. Like, I had nothing, right, but food. And it was an all out, like, there was nothing but food and fighting the food. Eventually I come to OA. It doesn't take at first. I'm not one of these people that came in and it took at first. It did not take at first, but something did happen. Because it didn't happen in the beverage program, though I still go to the beverage program, but that's not where my people are. I felt like alcohol helped me be with people. Food helped me be alone. So when I'm with you guys, I'm who I really am when I'm alone. Still, when I'm in AA, I'm still performing. I wish I wasn't. I catch it all the time still. And I'm like, ugh, why am I still trying to be cool? I had to be drunk to be cool. I never was effing cool. So here's my quick story in OA. I had periods of, eventually get abstinent. The first time I had a couple of years, eventually without my knowing, my weight starts dropping and I get hooked on the restriction inside my food plan. It looks good, but it's not good. It's a big secret for myself. That goes on for about a year. Oh, does she need to be in the hospital? Oh, I'll just start eating again. Oh, of course, binging, because what goes down must come up. And then that goes up again. I say, F it. I stop fighting it. I disappear for a year. This has happened 3 times. I've been back, and then I gave up entirely. And I just told everybody in my world, even though my whole world's recovery, I'm just going to free fall down for a year. I didn't say a year. I just said, I'm free falling. I can't stop eating. It was 10,000 calories a day. It had gone on for over a year. And I was like, I'm just going to keep eating until I die. Cause I don't know what else to do. And the more I try to do it, the worse it gets. And so I just kind of, I don't know. I gave up. And then the pandemic hit and I was like, good. At least I don't have to see anybody anymore and pretend that I'm okay with the situation. So, my old 10-step buddy calls and says, I've got this meeting. Just come with me. I'm like, I'm not going to I'm done with OA. It doesn't work for me. I did everything. I did step workshops, step studies. I did all the things and it never lasts. Either I end up anorexic or I end up binging. So she's like, just give it one last hurrah. And I did. And I didn't get it right away, but I've been back for 8 months and I'm doing things I've never done before. The biggest thing of which is I use my food plan. I'm still a food addict. Like, I'm a food addict. There are certain foods I do not consume. And I don't think that's for anybody else. That's just for me. I have friends who eat the sugar in recovery and I have friends that don't. There's a long list of things that don't work for me, but my amounts can't be restricted. I measure to make sure I get enough, but that's a floor. That's no longer a ceiling. And for the first time in 8 months, I have not lost my period. I still have hair. Maybe too much because I can't get a cut in this effing pandemic. So it's usually not this long and I forgot my rubber band. And I've texted everyone in my house out the door and they don't see it. So no one's bringing me a rubber band. So now to the fifth step, we'll get, it looks like 7 minutes of eighth step. I mean, fifth step. So I'm just going to skip to the fifth step. Fifth tradition. Don't worry, not the step. I'm on it. I'm good. Okay. So the tradition, primary purpose to carry the message to the compulsive overeater who still suffers. So I'm going to break it down the way I break it down. Primary purpose. The primary purpose, what I love, is it's not political. We're not selling each other. It's not a diet plan. I don't care what kind of thing you've got going or selling in your personal life. I don't have to worry about it. We have one purpose, right? Just one purpose. And I want to note in my personal life, like, I think it works in terms of this program. Like, there's one purpose and we'll get to the purpose. But I will say that I've used that phrase, primary purpose, for the past couple of years, like thinking of the traditions with my family and with friends, even in the other program, because just so happens where I live, the people who attend that other program are all of one political persuasion, of which I'm not. And do I stop going to meetings? Do I stop going to meetings? That didn't work for me. I started to fantasize about alcohol and then eventually food and then, So what's my primary purpose with people in recovery? Oh, it's to carry the message and stay sober and abstinent together. That's it. My father, shockingly, went on a different political persuasion than me, like completely different. And I had lost all respect for him. And then I stopped and said, what's my all done? 5 minutes?
5 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
What's my primary purpose with my parents? It's to give and receive love, literally nothing else. And I have to say this all the time, literally nothing else. They don't have to love, like they don't, we don't have to agree. We don't even have to understand each other. That's okay. I have such a good relationship with my parents because all I have to do is give and receive love. That's my primary purpose. That phrase, primary purpose, that I learned from these traditions helps me in so many places where I can get off all sorts of judgy, you know how it goes. I mean, I'm not the only one with a judging brain, you know, but it keeps me so effing alone. That's what all the have, who's suffering but me with my, you know? So, okay, primary purpose, carry the message. What I love about this is not say we advice give. This is not say our primary purpose is to give advice and tell each other, right? We carry the message, right? Whatever that means, it's usually my understanding, what it's been taught to me is it's our experience. My message is my experience. That's why my story is the fifth tradition. That's all I've got. That's all any of us have, as far as I'm concerned, is our stories, what works for us, what doesn't work for us, our struggles, our pain, our joy, all of it. Not a doctor's, not a therapist. There's all sorts of professionals. All the therapy in the world has never got me abstinent, ever. I've been in and out of treatment after OA. They told me I was actually hopeless. They literally, you're a hopeless case. I believed them. I actually forgot about OA. Like I didn't know, I knew there was a solution, whatever. Okay. Moving on. And the message is that it's really simple. There's only one solution, the steps. How we do that, there's a zillion ways. There's a zillion ways to work it. There's so many ways and they're all valid. Whatever works, works. But overarching is one solution. We go to the steps. It could look a different, there's a different books to do them in. There's workbooks. All you have to do is do them. It doesn't really matter how, to me. You might have a special way. I'm good with that too. I've just worked it so many different ways and there's no magic beans to me, right? When I'm willing, I'm willing. And I don't know when that's coming. So the thing that I do love is, and this is my favorite part, is the compulsive overeater part, that this is all of us, that the OA tent is effing huge. We all fit under it and we get to decide that we fit under it. Nobody else does. And it means, look, there's some weird things in program that come between like everyone, not weird, but right? Like we can each think like, well, this one has it. I don't want what that one has. Like, well, not even that. It's more like, well, thank God, like I don't have that, or the opposite. Like mine's way worse because, you know, it's stopping eating is different than starting eating is different than all of it. Well, I've had them all for different periods of time. I can tell you they all suck. Nobody wins. Nobody loses. It all sucks. And all of it fits into this room, these rooms, all of it. Whatever our issues with food are, whatever the compulsivity is, we get to be here and we get to decide. You know, and it's easy to forget that, at least for me. Okay. The still suffering. And this is where like, I have to remember, I forget this. And I'm embarrassed to say it, that like, do I call people that are missing from meetings? Like that's the still suffering, right? Like we all know the newcomer, the still suffering newcomer, but do I think about the still suffering, like the person I see in the meeting all the time and then suddenly they fall off? Did people call me when I fell off? Or text me. I will say that after years of a very long relapse, my old 10-step buddy, just one phone call changed my entire life. And 5 years before that, another horrific relapse. was an old sponsor going, I don't know why I was thinking of you today. And I'm like, I'm going to finish this bowl of whatever I was eating. And I wrote her, I'm like, I can't not finish this bowl. But then when I'm done, I'm done. And I was done for 2 years. You know, we never know what happens when we reach out, right? And I don't take that seriously. I have been saved by that. And I, when I say saved, I don't mean some like religious. I mean, it's fine if for you that means religious. I don't. I just mean that whatever that was connected me right back into the big light bulb to me that is OA that I just need to be plugged into. Look, I've never been abstinent and not hurt myself with food outside of OA. I have no shot without this program. I have none, literally none. I mean, you've heard my history and I didn't even give you the half of it. That was like the baby version. And so, and not that it's so bad. It's just that clearly I can't be alone with food. I can't be alone with food. I also, there's a lot of other things I can't be alone with too. Exercise, the scale. I don't know what I weigh, right? But when I think about the still suffering, I wish that I thought of people more. And maybe the more I work the steps, the better I'll get at that. And maybe I need to make a system for it, like just put it on a list like I do everything else. Like I'm waiting to think of other people. You know what? Sadly, that doesn't just pop in my mind. If I feel a little shame about that, of course I do. But it's also where I'm at, you know? So I'm trying to think if there's anything else. What I love about the primary purpose too in OA is that it's authority and it's permission. I have permission not to hear about every last thing in somebody's life and that I need to do something. Because I feel, it's not that I feel drained, it's that I feel useless. I don't know how to help somebody. I don't have the answers. And so I often don't answer the phone because I'm afraid that I won't know what to say until I remember, what's my primary purpose? It's just to share my experience, to listen and share my experience, to listen and share my experience. And if none of my experience relates, I could say that. That allows me to answer the effing phone when I remember that. Doesn't mean I always remember that. But, and also I don't have to do chit chat. I suck at the chit chat. Do you know what I mean? That's why I drank. I mean, eating was all alone, right? That's the food allowed me to keep a secret for me that I was alone when I was alone. Alcohol allowed me to keep a secret that I was alone when I was with people. But when I try to do chit chat, I can't do it. And guess what? In program, I don't have to, because my primary purpose is not to be popular or cool or anything, or even to be like eloquent. My primary purpose is I need to stay at, like, there's one thing, carry the message. And we carry the message because it carries it to ourselves and to whoever we're carrying it to. And it looks like I'm done. And so I'll be quiet. Thanks for listening.
Thank you very much, Rena. I identify on so many levels and really appreciate your share. Thank you so very much.